Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
I believe that we're going to win. I believe that, by the way, if I didn't think that, I wouldn't have our troops there. That's what you got to know.
Oh, boy. You know who that was and what he's talking about. Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on X... on what? I always want to say on I get the Phoenix call letters in my head, and I'm nowhere near Phoenix. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in, and welcome to our Sacramento listeners on KSAC. What is that? 14A? Is it 14A? Huh? We should know that, shouldn't we? I just talked to Christine Kraft on that radio station. Uh-oh. So if I don't know the exact number, the frequency number, does that mean they'll drop us after tonight? God, I hope not. Anyway, it's great to be back in the Sacramento area. Hi, everybody. Also to our listeners on KPTK in Seattle and, of course, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 146. The Phoenix Station. Are we on Little Rock yet? Miami? Minneapolis? No? Okay, still, okay. San Francisco, that's right, the Quake. Well, of course. I mean, that's like saying peanut butter without saying jelly. Chucklenuts gave his last press conference of the year today, talking about everything from the booming economy to switchgrass to success in Iraq. So, yes, indeedy, moron sounds on the program tonight. And you want crazy? We got crazy. He's still talking about this win in Iraq. Tis the season of the Prince of Peace, or so I've been told. And Bush is talking about building the military. We need more killers. We need more soldiers and Marines because there is endless war out there. And deck the halls with boughs of holly. I guess, right? A couple of emails. I'll tell you what we're going to do tonight. We're going to play some sound from Chuckle Nuts' press conference, and I have very, very little that I want to blab on about here, and then we're going to take lots of phone calls tonight. Now, I know a lot of people say, yeah, every time a son of a bitch says he's going to take lots of phone calls, he waits till 10 before... 10 minutes before the show is over. No, seriously, we're definitely going to do it tonight. Got this from Tim in Danbury, Connecticut. He says, Mike, just like you, I'm an atheist. Oh, his subject line, how do us atheists participate in Christmas? Just like you, Mike, I'm an atheist. I really don't care about Christmas. It has no meaning to me. I've already informed my family, but for the first time, I won't be there for Christmas. I would feel phony being there, as I've felt in the past. I plan on going to one of the Indian casinos to hang out on Christmas here in Connecticut. I would be interested in hearing your opinion for a young man like me. Well, Tim, you can Christmas, call it winter solstice. It's a fun holiday. I love Christmas. I use the vernacular. I use the term Christmas, which is Christ's Mass. I don't celebrate it that way. I have in the past. Kathy and I have gone to monasteries, Catholic churches, Protestant churches. One time we spent Christmas Eve sitting on the top of Stone Mountain, watching the sun come up the next morning. I think it's great. But the way I do it is to celebrate all those obvious parts of Christmas that have nothing to do with a Mass for Jesus Christ, and that is the Druidic elements that have been totally co-opted by the Christian faith. So you celebrate that. I used to love, most of my family's dead now, my nuclear family. I used to love to go home for Christmas, hang out with my mom, my sister, my brothers, whoever happened to be married at the time, hang out with their spouses, cousins would come up, and so on and so forth. And there was no great emphasis on the religious aspect of it. It was just more like a winter holiday, gift-giving, big meal, family together. So anyone who has a problem with the religiosity of the holiday, I don't think that means skip the holiday. We have a huge Christmas tree here in the house, lots of bright lights on it. This is Molly's first year of trying to destroy it. You know, we try to tell her, honey, it's to look at. Yeah, right. To look at. But the Christmas holiday, and it just so happens, the solstice this year, the winter solstice, December 22nd, is my son Chris's birthday, as it is every year, but it happens to be the solstice this year. Some years it is, some years it isn't. Some years it's the 21st that the solstice occurs. But so there's lots of ways to celebrate the holiday, Tim. The way we celebrate it in North America has more to do with Druidic tradition than it does with the Christian Messiah. You don't have to believe in the divinity of Jesus to celebrate his life anyway. I don't believe in the divinity of Gandhi. No one's tried to tell me that he was divine. I don't believe in the divinity of Martin Luther King Jr. No one has said he's divine. These are very human people, and yet I have deep and abiding respect in what they taught. I have no doubt there was a man named Jesus, an important philosopher and pacifist, anti-war activist. Unbeknownst to him, his followers were so taken with what he had to say that they formed this religion based around him, which I think he would probably freak if he knew about it. And it's been co-opted by people who are interested in power rather than people who are interested in spirituality. And you know, you don't have to. Every mythology has the virgin birth. Every religious mythology. Every religious mythology has the flood. Every religious mythology has this and that and this and that. Resurrections and gods coming down from heaven impregnating women. You know, you don't have to do that to. You don't have to acknowledge that stuff in order to honor someone who apparently, and we don't even know this to be true, but apparently had a simple message of peace and love and 2,000 years ago. His, I would say his teaching, and not just Jesus, I mean, how many people taught the same message? Jesus was just one avatar of the cosmic hoo-ha, the hairy thunderer, the... you know, whatever your belief system is, maybe the unified principle that unites gravity and the weak force and the strong force and the speed of light and your mama. I don't know. But the historic Jesus has had a huge impact on everybody's life. Let's face it. You know, most of us date everything we do from the supposed day of his birth. That's why it's 2006. So whether or not you believe the mythology around his life and the miracles and whatnot, yeah, you don't have to do that. You know, that's like believing that Zeus used to hurl thunderbolts from the top of Mount Olympus. That's like believing that, you know, any mythology. So, you know, have fun with the holiday, Tim. I think a lot of people take it too seriously. I really do. Right-wingers just take it so seriously. Oh, they're taking Christ out of Christmas. You're supposed to all the store. You know, they want to mercantilize Christmas. Isn't that funny? The right-wingers in this country have decided that Christmas is a holiday of buying and spending and getting. And anyone who objects to that and says, happy holiday, is somehow spitting on the cross. Everything is upside down. We live in an upside down world ever since Bush took over. All right? Okay. Jack wants to launch a meme here. Name the dead deer on Dick's lawn, Katrina. All right. Jack writes, "Hey, you ornery cuss, keep your head down and keep speaking the truth. Meanwhile, I hope you use your bully pulpit to help launch the meme, Name the dead deer on Dick's lawn, Katrina." That's very good. Katrina. Have they removed Katrina yet? Do you know? Kathy doesn't know. She's desperately trying to get some oxygen into her. Say what? Oh, Wongcat.com has updates. I doubt if Kathy is going to be opening her mic and talking tonight. She sounds like she's talking underwater. Poor girl is still dealing with this cold.
What?
There she is. All right, a couple more items, some sound, and your phone calls. So if you want to call in now, go ahead. If you want to wait about a half an hour, that'd be cool. But I want to hear from you tonight as we approach the winter solstice and Christmas. Are we? We're already in. We had Hanukkah. Hanukkah was last week, wasn't it? I don't even know.
What?
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
My kids are never happy with what's under the tree. Soon they'll understand Christmas sucks. Whoa, every freaking year Christmas sucks. Christmas sucks. Christmas sucks. Christmas sucks.
Hey!
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Well, in the spirit of Christmas, just hate him a little bit tonight, huh? Dominic, listening in Japan, an American writes, "Mike, you probably already heard about the outrageous discriminatory comments made by Representative Goode of Virginia regarding Muslims. I lived in Charlottesville, Virginia for 5 years, and thanks to gerrymandering, city residents like myself were stuck with this cracker as our representative. Do me a favor," Dominic writes, "tonight give this guy a bit of rhetorical red ass for all of us." Well, all right, you can find the story at T like Tom, P like Peter, M like Mike, TPM Muckraker, TPMMuckraker.com. And it's another one of these anti-Muslim letters. This waste of human DNA that's on CNN Headline News, talk show host, what's his name? Glenn Beck. And who else? A bunch of people have spread the rumor that when you are elected to Congress, you have to swear on the Bible, which is not true. As a matter of, well, open your mic, Kathy. I can't hear a word you're saying. Open your mic. Yeah, Glenn Beck started it, and then a couple of the other talk show hosts kept it going, that you're supposed to swear on the Bible when you take your oath of office, which is not true. They don't ask you to swear on anything. Now, there are some photo ops that occur after the official swearing in. You swear an oath that has nothing to do with the Bible or any other book. And some of these really crazed right-wing Christians want their picture taken with their hand on the Bible so they can convince the androids back home that, see, I'm being a good Christian here in the den of iniquity in Washington, D.C. Well, Beck and a bunch of these talk show hosts started this rumor that the man elected from Minnesota, Keith Ellison, who happens to be a Muslim, that he decided that he would not take the oath on the Bible, but on the Quran, which is nonsense. You know, he never did that. In the first place, I think it's against Quranic law or tradition to do such a thing to begin with. I don't know why in the Christian faith, putting your hand on the holy book, the Christian holy book, is somehow supposed to make you tell the truth. I have no idea. But this Representative Virgil Goode, in Republican Virginia now, is warning that because Keith Ellison, a Democrat from Minnesota, is going to put his hand in, on the Quran and be sworn in, which is simply not the case, but Republicans always lie. If your mama is a Republican, she's a liar, or she buys into lies, okay? All elected Republicans lie about everything. So Virgil Goode in Virginia is living up to that tradition. He's lying, and he's warning his constituents that the United States has to close its borders to guard against the influx of still more Muslims. Now, in this email he sent out, and he accidentally sent it to the wrong person, and it got out into the public here, but he also proudly recounts his retort to a Muslim student who asked him why he did not include the Quran with the Ten Commandments on his wall. And this creepy Virgil Goode said, quote, "As long as I have the honor of representing the citizens of the Fifth District of Virginia, the United States House of Representatives, the Quran is not going to be on the wall of my office." Rah! Now, the letter, which by some horrible error in Goode's office was sent to the chair of the local Sierra Club chapter, was obtained by a weekly newspaper in Charlottesville, Seville Weekly. And Goode said, "I wrote the letter. I think it speaks for itself." He also said, "If American citizens don't wake up and adopt the Virgil Goode position on immigration, there will likely be many more Muslims elected to office and demanding the use of the Quran. I fear that in the next century we'll have more Muslims in the United States if we do not adopt the strict immigration policies that I believe are necessary to preserve the values and beliefs traditional to the United States of America and to prevent our resources from being swamped." What the hell does that mean? Are you suggesting, you half-witted jackass, that Muslims come here for our wonderful welfare system? Oh, Jesus, God. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. The anti-Muslim rhetoric by these so-called Christian thugs. Don't you guys ever stop? Don't you ever get sick of swimming around in your own bile? I mean, don't you ever stop and think, you right-wing Christians, that if Jesus were walking the planet right now in the first place, you'd probably have him maced and beat up and thrown into Abu Ghraib, because, I mean, let's face it, he's a crazed Jew from Palestine, and can't have any of that. And he looks like an Arab. But don't you guys ever stop? Can't you ever just 5 minutes out of your worthless, crappy lives, can't you ever just talk about peace and love? Huh? Do you always have to be this ugly and evil and disgusting with your moronic? Oh, never mind.
There's blood on your hands, mister. You shed on that day won't wash your sins away.
Cleaning up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and you choose.
26 before the hour. Penny in Oxford, PA, sent me an email. She also posted this at my website, but I'll just read it to you. It says, Mike, last week I watched HBO's When the Levees Broke. I also heard Sarge from unreportednews.net on Mike's show discuss how those who survived Hurricane Katrina, or Corinna, if you are Laura Bush, how those people are still struggling to find basic necessities. This is America, for Pete's sake. Should we be able to help those who are in great need? On behalf of the many people who are still without, all these many months after our president stood in New Orleans for his photo op and promised that it would be rebuilt, I've made donations of $50 each to Jackson County Children's Services Coalition and Habitat for Humanity, specifying Katrina victims. I challenge you to meet or beat my donations. But if $100 is too much, donate $10. What better way to celebrate the season than to give to those who aren't as fortunate? Would Jesus prefer you spend cash at Walmart or on housing for your fellow man? Hell, I'm not even a Christian, and I get it. As an added bonus, you'll feel good about not spending the cash on something dumb. Thanks, and may you all find peace in 2007. Now, that's what Penny posted at my website, and she also just sent me an email saying the same thing. And, I can't. That's another thing. I just simply can't get my mind around. Have you noticed how the whole Katrina issue and the survivors in Louisiana and Mississippi and parts of Alabama, how that's all just, it's gone. No, nobody talks about it. Nothing. Not Bush. That horror, the aftermath of Katrina, never passes his lips. Not a single member of the White House press corps ever brings it up with this cretinous Tony Snow. Nothing. Nothing. The only people who are aware of it are the people who are going slowly insane, living in trailers about the size of, families, living in trailers about the size of your spare bedroom. And I don't know how to talk about that topic. I really don't. I think that we should do something, don't you? Now, I realize that the we that should be doing something is the government of, by, and for the people. I don't believe in this. We'll let the government do it. That's not us. No. We are the government. We are. I'm not saying necessarily that you have to sit down and write a check for $1,000 or $500 or $100 or $10, although that's what Penny's suggesting. I'm saying that the representatives of the people, our U.S. representatives, our senators, they should be prevailed upon. Look, screw Iraq. What about the Mississippi Gulf Coast? 16 months after the greatest tragedy, weather tragedy, to strike the United States in the history of the country, and nothing. Oh, sure, there's some con artists, private enterprises moved in, thugs, slugs, worms, parasites. I don't know. It always comes down to you and me, doesn't it? I mean, it really does. It comes down to you and me. Make the phone call. Send the email. Dig out just one more $20 donation. Just one more $50 donation. This is a good cause. That's a good cause. These good causes involve citizens of this country who should be under the protection of the federal government, which is us. It's you and me. It's all of us. I know we don't see it that way anymore because of these monstrous bastards who have gotten control of both Democrat and Republican Party, especially Republican Party. They're just bastards in the Democratic Party. They are monstrous bastards in the Republican Party. The bastards in our party will listen. They will, if enough pressure is applied. The monster bastards in the Republican Party, they don't, screw you. They don't listen to anything except their contributors, their corporate contributors, their masters. But Penny makes the point that, as Sarge has, and so many people have, who live there, who are struggling, who are starting to suffer burnout. I hear it in Sarge's voice. It's just that Sisyphean battle over and over every single day. Pushing that boulder. Just one more effort. And nobody responds. Nobody who has the power and the glory respond. Nobody. Oh, I know. Some churches in the South have sent groups over to pound nails and slap on some whitewash, but that's admirable and it's honorable and good for them. Although I sometimes wonder if they're doing it out of the generosity and charity of their hearts, or because they think Jesus is watching and is going to give them points in the great book. You know, I always question that, the cynical me. But as righteous as that may be, that's not going to solve what has happened to the people in Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama. It's not. It's just not. What is going to solve it is a massive influx of federal dollars, job training, education, health resources. We have hundreds of thousands of American citizens down there who are dying. They're walking around dying. They're dying emotionally. They're dying spiritually. They're dying psychologically. I mean, you and I sit here and whine, and rightfully so, about the Iraqi children with their arms blown off, but we have American children down there whose minds are being blown off. Oh, Christ. I don't know. You know, it's to have, and I know they didn't like the term refugee. Nobody wants to be called a refugee. What the hell are you going to call these people? Internal refugees. What was the story in the Times the other day? Thousands of high school kids. This is about Louisiana, whose parents are stuck somewhere else, trying to get work, trying to find work, and they send the kids back to continue in the community of their high school, and the kids are just kind of making it on their own. You can't do that. You know, what about all the 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 year old kids? You know, we adults are resilient. I know a lot of people say, well, kids can handle a lot. They're resilient. No, they're not. No, they're not. The scars are there forever. You and I can handle it. We're resilient. You know, we can look at tragedy and say, ah, Christ, you know, and somehow find the strength to go on. But a child, you know, some 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 year old who went through The horror of Mississippi, the horror of New Orleans, the horror of all these parishes and areas in these two states, especially Mississippi Gulf Coast, who may have lost family members, but damn sure lost their homes. Daddy doesn't have a job. Mama's going crazy. Grandma was in a rest home. We don't even know where in the hell she. I mean, come on, come on. Oh my God. And it's such a big problem. I mean, you and I can't handle it. You know what we can handle? Barely is when we. I'm almost finished. I know y'all hate for me to preach. I'm sorry. I really am. But, you know, what you and I can handle, yeah, we can give a day for Habitat. We can go help somebody build a house. We can give $10 to a panhandler on the street. We can save up all of our clothes we don't need anymore and take them to a good charity, and those are righteous acts. They are. But we can't handle Mississippi. We can't handle Louisiana. We can't. It's too big. This is the contract that Mississippi has with Maine, and Ohio has with California, and Phoenix has with Atlanta, and Detroit has with Sacramento. This is our contract. This is our social contract. This is our fabric. This is our tapestry. This is what we were supposed to be. This is what we were supposed to do. These are our people. These are our people that have been devastated. And nobody talks about it. Jesus Christ Almighty, nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about it. Nobody talks about it. Nothing. Nothing. Every once in a while, the newspaper of record or you know, the Times or the Post or LA Times, somebody will have this article about, oh, well, look, you know, more tragedy, more disaster, you know. And that's all they're supposed to do. They're supposed to be very Buddhist in their attitude. Look at it, note it, report it, move on. I just really wish that that's my Christmas wish, right? That tapestry that we are, that patchwork quilt that we are, that somehow that, you know, it covered us up now, like maybe at one time in imagination anyway, it used to. But we can't, you and I can't handle Mississippi, you and I can't handle Louisiana. It takes something just massively big. But it starts with you and me, doesn't it?
Reminds me things ain't changed.
It's good to see, be able to look in people's eyes and not see them all bloodshot.
All right, we're going to play very quickly for you here a montage regarding Katrina that Kathy put together. This is very appropriate to play 4 days before Christmas. It really is. I want you to just kick back and listen to this, and then we're going to go into right in the top of the hour break, I believe, right? All right. We played this the day before we were fired from Air America Radio. I was substituting for Randy Rhodes when they fired me, and this was what we played the day before, which was the anniversary of the destruction of Katrina.
If it keeps on raining, maybe it's going to
imagine what these families are feeling and what the...
All right, we've got a problem with it. Damn it. All right, we'll get it fixed. Ah! Sorry about that. But we do want to play it for you. Because a lot of people said, well, that's the reason you got fired. Because you played that. No. Now, just as kind of a sidebar to this, what we're talking about right now, an email from one of our, this is from Mike, I believe, and it's about, we talked about this the other day, this Wall Street bonus. Did you hear this? This came in today. First, we knew that Goldman Sachs was going to pay out I think over $1 billion in bonuses. Now, there was a guy named John Mack who got the record for the biggest bonus ever paid to a Wall Street chief executive. And it was $27.3 million. That was a record, but it didn't even last a week. Now, Goldman Sachs gave his chief executive, Lloyd Blankfein, $53.4 million. A bonus, an end-of-the-year bonus. Now, I can't even talk. The bonanza for this guy included a cash bonus of $27.3 million with the rest paid in stock and options. He took the helm of Goldman Sachs in June, after Henry Paulson, who was the head of Goldman Sachs, was nominated to be Treasury Secretary. This guy was on the job 6 months. And he gets a bonus, end-of-the-year bonus, of $53.4 million. Now, Goldman Sachs said last week it had set aside a total of $16.5 billion, with a B, for salaries, bonuses, and benefits. On average, that would translate to $622,000 per employee, on average. But there are sales weasels at Goldman Sachs who are getting tens of millions of dollars in bonuses. And we have people on the Mississippi Gulf Coast who apparently their worth as a human being is nothing. It's just trash. It's the stuff that gets stuck on the bottom of your shoe. They're not like the saints that work at Goldman Sachs, who work hedge funds and numbers in the margin and make their super ultra wealthy clients even more super ultra wealthy, and for doing that kind of filthy, disgusting work, they're paid tens of millions of dollars in bonuses. What the hell is wrong with this picture? Do we get a bonus this year, Gabby? Well, no, and we don't deserve one. I don't believe in bonuses. You know what our bonus is? We're employed. There's a bonus for you. Son of a bitch, I can't believe this. $53.4 million that Goldman Sachs gave its chief executive. And this rat bastard has been on, and he's a rat bastard because anybody who gets that amount of money as a bonus after being on the job 6 months and doesn't turn right around and say, okay, I don't deserve this. I don't deserve one day's interest on this. I'm a pencil pusher. I sit in an office on my large, lardy ass. I don't deserve $54.3 million or $53.4. Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to keep $100 so I can buy lunch here in Manhattan, and I'm going to give the rest of the money to the people in Mississippi who are struggling, who are living in bags and cardboard boxes. And I'm doing it in the spirit of Jesus. Because after all, it is Christmas, right? Oh, God. Now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to play that Katrina audio for you. I want you to hear it. And then we're going to do Chuckle Nuts at his final press conference of 2006. Too bad it's not his final press conference, period. And then your phone calls. So if you're on hold or thinking about dialing in and you're thinking, no, sucker traps me every night. I call and I sit there for an hour. It won't happen tonight. It won't happen tonight. Okay? $53.4 million bonus. 6 months on the job. Jesus.
The bonuses come in a year in which Goldman's shareholders have benefited from a rise of about 58% in the company's share price, the strongest returns of any Wall Street investment house. Lehman Brothers Holdings Incorporated and Bear Stearns companies have said they would pay about $12 billion in compensation each. Lehman said last week it paid its chief executive, Richard Fuld, $10.9 million in stock this year.
Welcome back, 7 past the hour. All right, as promised, we're going to play this a sound collection that montage, the word I was looking for, this that Kathy put together. This is what we played on the program the next day after playing this. We were fired by Air America, which, if you really want to get funky, is not surprising. Because I'm sure it pissed off the wrong people, but I don't know why I was fired. I really don't care. But this is the Katrina piece, and we're going to play it because it's important to remember, quote, the forgotten, close quote, at this time of the year, right? The forgotten. Now you're going to hear Pickles, the Pig Man, Chertoff of the Devil, Brownie, Bush, Cheney, Aaron Broussard, who is the president of Jefferson Parish. So sit back, If I don't know how this will affect you. To me, it's a three hanky sound montage. Here we go.
If it keeps on raining, maybe it's gonna break.
Each of us who have children know what it's like to lose your child for a minute in a department store. So we can imagine what these families are feeling and what they're thinking.
We have been abandoned by our own country.
Yes, our gasoline station up and running. Progress is being made.
Death toll is way, way, way below what projections were.
Tuesday morning, I opened newspapers and saw headlines that said New Orleans dodged the bullet.
I myself thought we had dodged the bullet.
When that storm came through at first, people said, whew. There was a sense of relaxation. There was a sense of relaxation at a moment, a critical moment.
When you think about taking your own child to the grocery store and getting separated from them in the grocery store, you can imagine what it would be like.
10,000 deaths minimum, said the mayor. Body bags for 25,000 are being flown into the region, blah, 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 blah.
I think the progress we're making is significant. We've now got a major National Guard presence in virtually every community in Mississippi south of I-20.
What I intend to do is lead an investigation to find out what went right and what went wrong.
We had Walmart deliver three trucks of water. FEMA turned them back. They said we didn't need it.
We didn't know about this in the White House.
The left is dancing on the graves of black people.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
When I said to the president that he should fire Michael Brown because of all that went wrong, with all that didn't go right last week, and he said, what didn't go right?
It's very important for us to understand the relationship between the federal government, the state government, the local government.
Oblivious, in denial, dangerous.
FEMA comes in and cuts all of our emergency communication lines.
We got to solve problems.
The Coast Guard said, come get the fuel right away. When we got there with our trucks, they got a word. FEMA says, don't give you the fuel.
We're problem solvers.
We're going to solve these problems. What I'm interested in is solving problems. We're moving on. We're going to solve these problems.
We are focused on solving problems. We're focused on solving problems. The president is interested in solving problems. We've got problems to solve, Bob. Bob, we've got problems to solve.
I, as president, am responsible for the problem.
People want us to do here is to play a blame game.
I know some just want to engage in the blame game, playing the blame game.
A hurricane hit New Orleans. George Bush is in Washington. How can he possibly be to blame for this?
Plenty of time to play the blame game.
Play the blame game, trying to finger point. I'm just not going to engage in the blame game or finger pointing that you're trying to get me to engage in. What you're doing is trying to engage in a game of finger pointing and blame gaming. Time for bickering and blame gaming is later.
The aftermath of Katrina has proven to be a godsend.
We want the Mississippi people to lay out the Mississippi vision about what this important part of the world is going to look like.
We look forward to hearing your vision so we can more better do our job.
Around the country, children who've been displaced because of Hurricane Katrina are starting to school this week.
Information I've received from locals is definitely very impressive.
Go yourself, Mr. King.
I also want to encourage anybody who was affected by Hurricane Katrina to make sure their children are in school.
Nobody's coming to get us. Nobody's coming to get us.
Life's not easy.
Somebody's coming to get you on Tuesday. Somebody's coming to get you on Wednesday.
Mardi Gras in September, the big easy.
Somebody's coming to get you on Thursday. Somebody's coming to get you on Friday.
Liberals are dancing the Cajun reel with thousands of grinning skeletons.
The secretary has promised. Everybody's promised. They've had press conferences.
We're working to help these pipelines get up and running. Pipelines carry refined product.
For God's sakes, shut up and send us somebody.
Particularly spent a lot of time talking about the damage done to our energy infrastructure and its effect on the availability and price of gasoline.
Yeah, Mama, somebody's coming to get you.
Well, who wants to be depressed? So what we choose to do is just laugh at these yokels.
She drowned Friday night. She drowned Friday night.
Making their bed, they can lay in it. They're taking their shower, they can drown in it.
Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, his hat lost his entire house. There's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
If it keeps on raining, love is going to break. When the levee breaks, have no place to stay.
You know, as I listen to that, I have particular hatred and contempt for Rush Limbaugh. Who also is paid about $50 million a year to spread that kind of filth. But when I listen to Limbaugh on this little montage, I really think evil thoughts, like he should have his skin stripped off his body. You know, what a pig. What a filthy, hateful, drug-addled pig. pig to make those statements about people who are suffering in a way that Limbaugh will probably never suffer. When he dies, it'll be quick. It'll be a massive stroke or a massive heart attack. The son of a bitch will start to be cold before he hits the ground. But somebody that could use his microphone and his 10 million or whatever it is, 12 million listeners a week to do something. And this filthy, degenerate pig makes those kinds of comments about the people who suffered in New Orleans and Mississippi. And we in this country really do have the ability to produce some of the slimiest human beings imaginable. With all that's available here, this wealth-choked country for the upper 2, 3, 4%, just absolutely, they vomit on their wealth. They can't process it fast enough. They can't spend it. They can't eat it. They can't. And yet we produce the kind of beasts like Rush Limbaugh, or Michael Chertoff, or Dick Cheney, or these people who. There's no illusion that I can use. You know, I call them vampires. I call them the undead. And you know, so what. So what? But when I listen to that, I think about Rush Limbaugh, and it just reminds me, for some reason, reminds me of one of the scenes in Suddenly Last Summer when Elizabeth Taylor is explaining to her shrink, Montgomery Clift, what happened to her cousin Sebastian when they were on the beach in Mexico. And if you remember the movie, Sebastian, who happened to be gay. It was really a revolutionary movie for its time. And he used his cousin, the character that Elizabeth Taylor played, as bait. And he would buy her these very revealing bathing suits, and all the young men would come around. And Sebastian, and finally the young men turn on him, and they chase him through this Mexico. I don't know, it's probably Acapulco, some resort area in Mexico. They chase him, and they finally catch him. And he runs, and the interesting thing, you never see Sebastian's face, but they catch him, and they pull him down, and this huge pile of poverty-stricken boys and young men pull Sebastian down and eat him. They start ripping his flesh off with their teeth, and you know, Elizabeth, her character is saying this to Montgomery Clift's character. And it was really a scary moment when I don't know how old I was when that movie came out. It was like, holy God. Oh, man. But when I think of Limbaugh, I just wonder if the time will ever come when he's on one of his child molestation trips to the Dominican Republic with his little cache of Viagra. If he'll be chased down by 15 and 16-year-old boys who will catch him and eat him. Oh, Merry Christmas. Oh, my God. But that's what I think about Limbaugh and some of these people are just, they're beyond vile. There's not a word in my lexicon anyway that would describe that kind of attitude or that kind of a person.
They will find their neighbor all along the way.
I'm thinking, I'm getting over that. Boy, you don't love God.
If you don't love your neighbor, if you got.
Thank you. people being abhorrent about war. War is terrible.
Twenty-two past the hour. All right, now, also as promised, let's move into these quotes from the moron at the final press conference of 2006 today. After his usual year-end and wrap-up about the booming economy and biodiesel and driving batteries on switchgrass and working farmers and taxes and advancing freedom in the war on terror, Bush answered a few questions from reporters who really only wanted to ask about his Iraq policy. Poor, coked-out, dry-drunk Bush still thinks he can win in Iraq, still talking about winning and success, so out of touch with reality. Meet the new speech, same as the old speech, even 3 years and thousands of dead people later. The reporter says, Mr. President, less than 2 months ago, at the end of one of the bloodiest months in the war, you said, absolutely, we're winning. Yesterday, you said, we're not winning, we're not losing. Why did you drop your confident assertion about winning?
My comments, the first comment was done in this spirit. I believe that we're going to win. I believe that, and by the way, if I didn't think that, I wouldn't have our troops there. That's what you got to know. We're going to succeed. My comments yesterday reflected the fact that we're not succeeding nearly as fast as I wanted when I said it at the time, and that conditions are tough in Iraq. You know, when I speak, like right now, for example, I'm speaking to the American people, of course, and I want them to know that I know how tough it is, but I also want them to know that I'm going to work with the military and the political leaders to develop a plan that will help us achieve the objective. I also want our troops to understand that that we support them, that I believe that tough mission I've asked them to do is going to be accomplished.
Wait. I thought you said mission accomplished 3 years ago, you filthy bastard. Don't you remember, George, the big boat? Yeah. And you flew in on an airplane and you were all dressed up like a real fighter pilot? And then you went below decks and, you know, goofed on the officers and then you came up on the deck of the boat. You remember, it was a big old boat. And the sailors, soldiers, whatever you call them, George, they put a banner up there. Not Karl Rove, not anyone else. Said mission accomplished. Remember, you murderous, lying son of a bitch, and now you stand there today? And say that you're going to explain to our military what the mission is and how it can be accomplished. You filthy liar. My God. The next candy-ass reporter asks about whether he would, Bush that is, go against the advice of the generals he always says he listened to if they spoke out against a double-down surge of troops into Iraq. The candy-ass says, Mr. President, if you conclude that a surge in troop levels in Iraq is needed, would you overrule your military commanders if they felt it was not a good idea?
That's a dangerous hypothetical question.
Oh.
I'm not condemning you. You're allowed to ask anything you want. Let me wait and gather all the recommendations from Bob Gates, from our military, from diplomats on the ground. That's interested in the Iraqis' point of view. And then I'll report back to you as to whether or not I support a surge or not. Nice try.
You sarcastic bastard. Nice try. Why don't you take your Game Boy and Barney and go run back to the West Wing and start looking under settees and couches for weapons of mass destruction? You ugly, hate-filled little man.
Right for me and you, George W. Bush, We'll give our country a push and put us back on the road to what's right and true. George W. Bush, we'll give our country a push. He's the man who'll do what's right for me and you. Now Republicans and Democrats and independents too, well, they all like what W's done. I know that you will too. George W. Bush.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. All right, let's get right back to Chucklenuts and his final press conference of 2006. Because the last one that we're going to play for you in just a second here is the one that is just, Anyway, the next candy-ass reporter asked about whether No, we already did that one. That's about the dangerous hypothetical question, he says to everybody. That's a dangerous hypothetical question. Oh, my God. Bush stands firm on hypothetical questions, such as this one about surging in more troops. The candy ass says, thank you, Mr. President. What do you say to people who say more troops in Iraq would increase the sectarian split and not calm things down?
The hypothetical questions, I'm not going to answer them today. I'm not going to speculate out loud about what I'm going to tell the nation when I'm prepared to do so about the way forward. I will tell you we're looking at all options. And one of those options, of course, is increasing more troops. But in order to do so, there must be a specific mission that can be accomplished with more troops.
What?
And that's precisely what our commanders have said, as well as people who know a lot about military operations. And I agree with them. That there's got to be a specific mission that can be accomplished with the addition of more troops before, I agree.
You rat bastard. You rat bastard! You never said that was the military. Two of the Joint Chiefs said 2 days ago, we are going to oppose any more troops in Iraq unless there's a specific mission. Don't act like it was your idea all along, numbnuts. You're the one that keeps our troops there without a mission. My God, did you hear that?
Well, the options, of course, is increasing more troops, but in order to do so, there must be a specific mission that be accomplished aboard. This is insane. This is insane. I'm the decider. I'll decide. Jesus God. So he's trying to say to these candy-ass reporters, and not one of them stood up and said, wait a minute, Mr. Chucklenuts. That's not your idea. Your idea is to throw dead bodies after more dead bodies. Your military commanders told you, unless there's a clear mission, no more troops. And now he tries to... Oh, my God.
He goes on to demonstrate his total break with reality with this answer to a reporter's question about how the American people are no longer supporting the war in Iraq. The candy-ass reporter says... In the latest CBS News poll, 50% of Americans say they favor a beginning of an end to U.S. military involvement in Iraq. All right, candy ass, that's not true at all. It's more like about 80% of us, you coward. By this and many other measures, there is no clear mandate to continue being in Iraq in a military form. Are you still willing, Mr. President, sir, please, to follow a path that seems to be in opposition to the will of the American people?
I am willing to follow a path that leads to victory. And that's exactly why we're conducting the review we are.
Yeah.
Victory in Iraq is achievable.
Listen to this.
It hadn't happened nearly as quickly as I hoped it would have.
Would have.
I know it's the fact that there is still unspeakable sectarian violence in Iraq. I know that's troubling to the American people.
Troubling!
And so... It's been a tough period for the American people. They want to see success.
We want to get out.
And our objective is to put a plan in place that achieves that success. I'm often asked about public opinion. Of course I want public opinion to support the efforts. I understand that. But, Jim, I also understand the consequences of failure.
Oh, God.
And therefore, I'm going to work with the Iraqis and our military and politicians from both political parties to achieve success.
Can you believe what you're hearing? Okay. Bush's answer to the next admittedly trite question from another candy-ass White House reporter seems almost as callous here, his answer, as Tony Snow's speculation the other day that Muslims are simply evil infused with hate, and that's why they fight our occupation of their country and our rape of their women and our killing of their people and their children. Huh? Huh? Because they're full of hate! This candy-ass reporter says, Mr. President, Lyndon Johnson famously didn't sleep during the Vietnam War, questioning his own decisions. You have always seemed very confident of your decisions, but I can't help wonder, sir, if this has been a time of painful realization for you, as you yourself have acknowledged that some of the policies you hoped would succeed have not. Has it been a painful time?
Most painful aspect of my presidency has been knowing that good men and women have died in combat. I read about it every night.
Read about it.
My heart breaks for a mother or father or husband and wife or son and daughter. It just does.
Just does.
And so when you ask about pain, that's pain.
Oh.
Most people have asked me to do one thing, and that is to make sure that they're child didn't die in vain, and I agree with that.
Oh, you bastard.
That sacrifice has been worth it.
Oh, you filthy devil, you. Listen to the tone of his voice, so casual, so detached. There's no emotion there, no human feeling when he talks about how he reads about the deaths, and that makes him feel bad. My heart breaks for a mother or father or husband or wife. Wife. Or son or daughter just does. So when you ask about pain, that's pain. Oh, damn, I have to take 3 Buffer and every night. The pain is so bad. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The next candy-ass reporter asked about what mistakes Bush will admit to in Iraq. Try not to laugh. The candy-ass reporter says, part of the process of looking at the way forward could reasonably include considering how we got to where we are. After 5 years now of war, what lessons will you take into the final 2 years of your presidency?
Absolutely, Jim, that it is important for us to be successful going forward is to analyze that which went wrong. Clearly one aspect of this war that has not gone right is the sectarian violence inside Baghdad
that we caused.
A violent reaction by both Sunni and Shia to each other that has caused a lot of loss of life.
A lot of loss of life.
Listen, last year started off as an exciting year with the 12 million voters. And, the attack on the Samara Mosque was Zarqawi's successful attempt to foment this sectarian violence, and it's mean, it is deadly, and we've got to help the Iraqis deal with it.
Last year started off as an exciting year. Whee! Abu Ghraib, waterboarding, rapes, beheadings. It's like Disneyland for Dick Cheney. Whee! Last year started off as an exciting year, and then it just went to hell. I don't know. That rat bastard Muslim Zarqawi, whatever his name is, he did it. It was going to be an exciting year and fun. Finally tonight, a reporter asked him about the most important thing on Bush's mind other than the new PlayStation, burning a hole in the limo outside. You know, his legacy? The Candy Ass reporter says, I've just got two questions related to the amazing fact that a quarter of your presidency lies ahead. First, I keep reading that you'll be remembered only for Iraq, and I wonder what other areas you believe you're building a record of transformation you hope will last through the ages. And second, what is your plan for either changing your role or keeping control of the agenda at a time when Democrats have both houses on the Hill and when the 08 candidates are doing their thing?
First part of the the last 2 years. I'm going to work hard, Michael.
Yeah.
I'm going to sprint to the finish.
Sprint.
And we can get a lot done.
Uh-huh.
And you're talking about legacy. Here, everybody's trying to write the history of this administration even before it's over. I'm reading about George Washington still. My attitude is if they're still analyzing number one, 43 ought not to worry about it and just do what he thinks is right. And make the tough choices necessary. We're in the beginning stages of an ideological struggle, Michael. It's going to last a while. And I want to make sure this country is engaged in a positive and constructive way to secure the future for our children. And it's going to be a tough battle. And it's going to take a while for people to analyze mine or any other of my predecessors until down the road when they're able to take, watch the long march of history.
Yeah.
And determine whether or not the decisions made during the 8 years I was president have affected history in a positive way.
Raise your hands. How many folks think we need to wait decades for historians to decide if this pissant has affected history, as he puts it, in a positive way? Anybody? Hello? Can I see some hands? And finally this. One more, just to prove that he's completely out of touch with reality. Bush talks about the shopping cure. His answer to everything. 9/11, go shopping. Bloody quagmire in Iraq, shop till you drop. Impeach him or send him to an asylum, but get him out of my sight!
As we approach the end of 2006, the American economy continues to post strong gains. The most recent jobs report shows that our economy created 132,000 more jobs in November alone, and we've now added more than 7 million new jobs since August of 2003. The unemployment rate has remained low at 4.5%. The recent report on retail sales shows a strong beginning to the holiday shopping season across the country. And I encourage you all to go shopping more.
Oh, God. Oh, please. Where's the knife? For me. No, I've cut my own throat. A recent report on retail sales shows a strong beginning to the holidays. You mean the Christmas? You mean the baby Christ shopping season? Bill O'Reilly, he said holiday shopping season. I encourage y'all to go shopping more.
Victory is a country that where the Saddamists and the terrorists can't unwind the democracy.
All right, so Great Hair sends me an email. As I watched the wind-up toy president this morning, my anger grew and grew as usual. Nothing new came out of his pre-programmed mouth, so I turned my wrath on the Stepford Press Corps. It's as if they'll be fired if they ask the really hard questions, and they very well might. Here are some of those hard questions. Mr. President, what's the status of the recovery of the American Gulf Coast? Mr. President, what do you think of the recently reported huge transfers of wealth in America in the past 6 years? Mr. President, do you have any thoughts on the state of health care in America? Mr. President, why have there been no penalties on the companies who are engaged in war profiteering? Mr. President, what is being done about the billions of lost and missing American taxpayer money in Iraq? Mr. President, why do you think most Americans disapprove of your handling of our country and the war? And on and on and on. No tough questions asked of this swine. Only the ones that give him a segue to the replaying of the tapes. Yeah, great hair, you're right. I honestly, not that it matters, but I look at the White House press corps with nothing but contempt. They're just, they're rats. They really are. They're cowardly rats. There are a couple of exceptions. You know who they are. There's Helen Thomas, and there's Helen Thomas, and there's Helen Thomas. And a couple of them come close to asking legitimate questions, but they're rats. They're enablers and rats. And it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's just terrible that they give this guy a free pass, isn't it? And toss him these little baby-ass questions. All right. I promised. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from New York. Hey, AJ.
Hi, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. You know, I myself was born of a virgin.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I don't ask anybody to bow down and pray to me. I'm just, you know, I'm satisfied with the miracle of it, and I get on with my life.
I'm not even going to say anything because you're not going to get me to talk about your mama. That's just not, no, that's not going to happen.
What I wanted to talk about tonight was, I have a comment. I wanted to talk about Sarge.
Okay.
And this is the kind of comment, first of all, it's a backhanded compliment to him. And it's the kind of comment that makes me thankful that I have, the anonymity of calling into a talk radio show.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how popular this would be, but I got to tell you, I am so tired of the South. I am tired of the arrogance of Texas and the criminally intentional boorishness and ignorance of the Deep South. And I'm a human being, you know. I'm as susceptible to falling into the trap of stereotypes as anyone else, and it's a divided country anyway. And the things that the South perpetrates, the Southern Christians, the zealots, the fact that we are politically held hostage by the South, that we can never run anyone from Oregon or Jersey or Dakotas or any place else. And we've always got to please the South when we pick a presidential candidate. I am so tired of it. I wish they'd secede again. This time I don't think they'd get a fight. And I'm tired of that, too. I'm tired of this turning inside and out of the Civil War. It was a war against treason, and the stars and bars is a treasonous flag. And so that I tell you by way of saying that when Sarge calls in, as he did last night, it's no small thing for me to absolutely be in admiration of this guy. First of all, I've been listening to him like everybody else, since he called in when Katrina hit.
Right.
And I've been in tremendous admiration of his efforts and his work with the coast and working against the grain with the politicians down there.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, to my northern ears, it's so good to hear that southern, that deep southern accent, talking sense. And I hope that Sarge takes that in the right way and doesn't take it as an insult. But I am very, very tired of the whole thing. And when I heard him last night, and my wife and I were listening to the radio with our mouths agape, you know, and he hung up. And I said, I do believe that the old Sarge is just about to cry. I mean, you could hear the frustration in his voice. And I hope that he, I mean, where are the vets? Where are the Christians? Where are these people whose own stakes in this country are being run through the mud? I am not one of those people. I never fought, you know, and never will, you know. And I don't have a dog in the fight, not in that way.
Right.
But for every Sarge that we hear, why don't we hear 50 more? Why aren't they the ones taking down this regime?
I got you. AJ, we got a break here. I'll try to answer some of what you brought up when we come back after the break. Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate it. We'll be right back, Truth Seekers. Stay with us. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Thinking about AJ's comments there, I tend to agree with part of it. I think the South, as a state of mind, not necessarily a region, but as a state of mind or an attitude, has in fact pretty much either won the what down here is referred to as the War of Northern Aggression, or have fought to a stalemate, regardless of what happened when the South surrendered, when Lee surrendered to Grant. Where was it? Appomattox Courthouse, yeah. Regardless of that, the war went on, and to this day, it still goes on. But either Southern white politicians have fought it to a standstill, or they have won. Now, by that I mean, first of all, it has been Southern white politicians who have come up with all these wedge issues. I know a lot of people say, well, that was Dick Nixon. But it was specifically and deliberately based on what would get white Southerners to switch from Democratic Party to the Republican Party. Strom Thurmond had an idea. He just said, to hell with it, if you're going to integrate the schools or integrate the military or whatever, then I'll become a Dixiecrat. And of course, Trent Lott loved that. Now, as far as regional accents are concerned, yeah, if you hear a real thick, heavy Southern accent with pronouns messed up and ings changed and so on and so forth, it's kind of like somebody in the UK when they hear a Cockney accent. They just automatically associate it with stupidity and ignorance. There's an awful lot of stereotyping that's done. In the South, they will tell you that someone from Ohio, like me, I've been here for 38 years, and I still have people say, why do you talk through your nose? You sound like a Yankee. Or somebody from New Jersey, somebody from New York. You all sound like mafia. You know, that's kind of what the attitude is here in the South. You're fast-talking Yankee, fast-talking New Yorker. So that regional thing, you know, it happens all over. The only parts of the country that I think are clear of that, when you get out west, people in Arizona, California, New Mexico, Oregon, Washington, that's not there. But in the east and the south, you find it. Now, anybody in the country can recognize a Southern accent except Southerners. To them, I mean, it's like, what? What are you talking about, Southern accent? This is the way I talk. What are you talking about? The stereotyping of the black vernacular here in the South, this is where I live. If you hear, take for example Atlanta, which has become the hip hop music capital of the known universe, When you hear a couple of black record moguls talking in a restaurant here in Atlanta, if you're just listening and don't look, you know, you can stereotype them very easily because a lot of what is said is so-called jargon from the hood, or it has a deliberately calculated, uneducated sound to it. That's kind of like, kiss my ass, white man. I'm not going to talk the way you talk. I'm going to talk the way I talk. When you turn around and take a look, though, then you see a couple of black businessmen sitting there who are discussing multi-million-dollar recording deals. No different from what any white record executive would be doing any place in the country. So, yeah, I'd get what you're saying, AJ, of course. Now, then you hear somebody like Sarge, who has a distinct so-called Mississippi accent. By the way, there's no such thing as a Southern accent. You've got a North Carolina accent, Georgia accent, South Georgia accent, Georgia Mountain accent. Zell Miller has an accent that is exclusive to the North Georgia Mountains. You can go 20 miles north of where Zell Miller's from, and the people talk differently. Once you cross that North Carolina-Georgia state line, it's a whole different accent. So there's no such thing as a Southern accent. To the untrained Yankee ear, it all sounds the same, of course. But once you live here, once you've spent time here, Louisianans sound nothing like coastal North Carolinians, who in turn sound absolutely nothing like Virginians, who wouldn't be caught dead speaking Alabamian, which sounds nothing like people from Kentucky or Tennessee. You understand what I'm saying? That's the way it is. But people in different parts of the country have classified a Southern accent as that which comes from a dumbass. And part of that has to do with our heritage. Just like AJ said, next time the South secedes, let them go. I understand that attitude. There's a lot of white people in the South who agree with that. There's no question about it. But that is a result of stereotyping. It's a result of deliberately, just like I know white Southerners who will deliberately lard on that Southern accent, as Yankees would call it, a Southern accent. George Bush. Every time Bush opens his mouth when he's talking to an audience in the South, he starts talking like that. Yeah, down here in Texas. I'm from Texas. T-E-S-S-A-S. Texas. You know, that's hog snot. And anybody with the ounce of sense, or as we say in the South, a lick of sense, knows that. But when you hear people in the South, Morris Dees, who runs the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is an organization that investigates hate groups, white hate groups, and occasionally they'll list black groups that are hate groups too. But Morris Dees, who has been running the Southern Poverty Law Center since God was a teenager in Montgomery, Alabama, you listen to Morris Dees and he sounds like he has a mouthful of marbles. He's a white, curly-haired man. He just talks with one of the deepest Southern accents. We have people down here, Mike Mears, who's a former mayor of Decatur, Georgia, which is more or less an honorary position. Mike Mears, who takes death penalty cases, who will bust his ass trying to keep people off of death row because he's an anti-death penalty advocate. When you listen to Mike Mears talk, you hear that white Southern thing. And it's very easy to write people off. Whether they're black or white, Yankee or Southerner, gay, straight, doesn't make any difference. From New Jersey, from Mississippi, to write them off and say, well, all I hear is the accent. I don't care. But this is a form of verbal racism, AJ. It really is. I'm sorry, pal. And I think you'd be the first to acknowledge that. It's a form of verbal racism or classism or some type of ism. And I appreciate you being honest about it. I've said a million times. I've been down here for 38 years. I'm a racist white man. And I acknowledge it every day that I have to acknowledge it. I am a racist son of a bitch, but I struggle against it. I've struggled against it all my life. And some days I feel like I've overcome it. Some days I feel like I haven't. And I mock Southerners because of their accent, even though I know damn good and well that I can listen to a Sarge or a Morris Dees or anybody from the South, Mike Mears, anybody from the South, and know full well as I'm about to mock them because of the way they talk that they're probably smarter than I am, more dedicated to their cause than I am, and on and on and on. Now, these Southern religious freaks, that's a different story altogether. There is something about Christianity in the South that is unique to the South. This is where the most hypocrisy is. This is where the most double dealing is, the most backstabbing, the most lying, sneaking, nasty-ass people who claim to be Christian, and they're just devils, just absolute devils. When's the last time you heard about some preacher from upstate Maine who railed against homosexuals, for example, caught in bed with his male lover? You don't hear about that because the hypocrisy is not there. The South is known for its hypocrisy. Southern women, Southern men. Now, I'm talking about white folks. I'm talking about white folks because you don't find hypocrisy that I'm talking about with Southern blacks. Southern blacks will just get in your face and tell you the truth. But Southern whites, man and woman, are hypocritical. That's just a given. So I don't know what to tell you, AJ, except that's my story and I'm sticking to it. It was an interesting phone call. I hear what you're saying. I know what you're saying. And yeah, when you when you're dealing with what you're dealing with, and you run across, even via the radio, a man like Sarge, it really gives you whiplash, doesn't it?
I see a lot of the Bubbas who work in my administration who've shown up.
You just had to play that, didn't you, Kathy? Okay. And see, Kathy now, AJ, Kathy's a native Southerner, see, so.
What?
she's a native damn near dead Southerner tonight, I swear to God. Now, that's a very interesting subject, and I wish I were more articulate on in talking about it, because it's very intriguing. Especially for someone like me who, as a kid growing up, I had nothing but a lot of disdain and kind of an ugly feeling for Southerners. I lived in Ohio after World War II, that decade after World War II ended, when there was this huge migration of Southern whites and blacks that came north looking for work. The war ended, all the war plants started to close, and living in Toledo, Ohio, which was a feeder city for Detroit, the automotive capital of the world, we had an awful lot of hillbillies. That's what we called them. The white ones were hillbillies. The blacks that came north, we didn't see a lot back in the 50s because they stayed in the ghetto someplace. I didn't even know that we had a ghetto until I got a little bit older. But the white Southerners that came up from Tennessee and Kentucky and Alabama, us northern kids used to just mock them mercilessly because they were dumbass barefoot hillbillies. And where do we get that idea? I guess from our parents, right? Yeah, we need to get in that some night. All right, phone calls. Back to your phone calls, and I appreciate your patience here. Kevin is calling from Connecticut. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program. Yo, Kevin.
Hello?
Yeah, Kevin.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing all right. What, you fall asleep?
No, I'm sorry. Well, welcome back. You know,
Thank you.
I'm glad you're back.
Me too.
And I was thinking about I listened to your Alex Jones. I listened to your appearance on that show.
Uh huh.
And about the 9/11 Truth Commission.
Right.
And I think from the start, from 9/11 on, we were told not to ask any questions.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
We were told to shut up and listen to the adults in the White House.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of questions about 9/11. You know, and I'm not going to go into them with you on the air, but I just wanted your general view about 9/11 and what you think.
Well, all right, I can give to you. Kevin, thanks. Thanks for the question. Thanks for holding on. Let me tell you, very quickly, and I've said this before, I do not believe the official story, period. I do not believe that 19 hijackers, 15 of whom were from Saudi Arabia, came to this country and on a given day defeated with box cutters the entire United States military surveillance operation and took down four jetliners and 3,000 people, among them 2,500 Americans, two buildings, and put a hole in the Pentagon. I do not believe that story. Now, obviously something did happen. Duh. But as far as what I do believe, I don't have a clue. I just know what I don't believe. I would like to drop out of everything that I do and spend a year and just do research and try to get it straight in my head, because it was either the most hideous crime ever committed against this country by an American administration, or it was the second most hideous crime ever committed against this country by an administration because of their lack of preparedness, or it was the third most hideous crime ever committed against this country by an administration because of its willingness to let something happen that they knew was going to happen, or none of the above. I don't know. I just know I do not believe, I can't believe, that these 19 people with box cutters were able to coordinate the way they coordinated and do the destruction that they did. And nobody, not a single person in the United States military, government, or intelligence communities did anything to intercept, stop, interfere with, or respond. No. So I don't know what the truth is. I'll go with Agent Moldar. The truth is out there. I have no idea. But I'm not prepared to take a stand. I know some people take a stand. Some people have, excuse me, have all the reasoning, all the truth that they need, and can very easily lay out a sequence of events, how it happened, when it happened, who's responsible, and so on and so forth. I can't do that. But I do know this. The story that is told by the Bush administration is a lie. I don't know what part of it is a lie. I don't know what...
very comfortable in the job because I've got great advice and advisors to whom I get good advice from, great advisors to whom I listen.
Yeah, I'm reading some of the emails as a result of AJ's phone call, and somebody pointed out that in reference to Sarge has what here in the South is referred to as an aristocratic Southern accent, at least by people outside of this region who look at the Southern accents as all being the same. And someone else suggested that if you really want to read something interesting about the South, Southern Ladies and Gentlemen is a good book. Florence King, Southern Ladies and Gentlemen. What, Kathy?
I love her.
I thought you were groaning. All right, back to your phone calls. William is calling from Louisville, Kentucky. William, welcome to the program. Hey, William.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine, sir.
First of all, I want to say what a relief it is to know that we're allowed to ask whatever questions we want.
Yeah, isn't that something?
It's great. I'm relieved.
But he qualified it. He said that's a very, what did he say? It's a very dangerous.
Dangerous hypothetical question.
Yeah, the arrogant little bastard. Oh, my God.
They don't even know.
Arrogant little bastard.
Yeah, I want to go up to the less sort of destructive end of the hierarchy of needs, back to the horrendous bonus issue.
Oh, yeah.
Which, happened to ironically reside in the haven of liberalism of New York City, where the transnational banks seem to love to hang out.
Yeah.
Just to add to that irony. Anyway, and just to encourage people to engage in what I call the soft embezzlement of low productivity at work, if you happen to be able to do it and could be sneaky and get away with it. One handy
soft tech. Embezzlement of low productivity.
Yeah, just kind of sticking your foot out of the bus.
I know what you mean.
Pushing down kind of hard, a little harder day after day.
That's funny.
A handy way to do that, too, since corporate spying has gotten more and more sophisticated, is just unplug the network connection from the back of your computer. It really puts a cramp in their style.
Oh, God. I'll tell you, it's a sorry state of affairs when the bonuses for the pigs have gotten so high that normal people try to plot ways to upset the corporate eat-em-alive machine that just seems to keep moving along no matter what we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
No matter what we do. How in the hell do you get a $53 million bonus? What did you do to deserve that? That's for 6 months' work. Did you figure out a way to, I don't know, a walk on water? No, that's been done. What the hell did you do to earn $53 million? Shuffle money around for some freak who lives out in Long Island or something?
Something like that.
I
don't know.
God.
It's insane. I worked in those banks, too. I had to go up there to find work and tempt out at those big uglies.
Yeah.
And so I know what real low-life people they are, just firsthand. And
they all talk funny, too.
What's funny, though? Once they found out I said, I and y'all a couple times, the eyes got real wide on me. And maybe I'm just paranoid, but I feel sure it led to my dismissal at one bank that remain unnamed.
Just didn't figure you were gonna do something southern, huh?
I swear they were looking at my feet.
Oh my God! What a country! What a country!
The only other thing I wanted to drop on you, since and again, I apologize for going back to the lighter side of things after hearing all the rest, but you've been talking about moves the past couple of days, and the two I always like to clue people in on are Brazil and network.
Oh yeah, Brazil to me is just I don't know how to classify that movie. The fact that De Niro is in it was just a stroke of genius. It reminds me. Are you old enough to remember TW3? That was the week that was on television. It was done by the same people who did the British comedy troupe. What the hell was it? Monty Python. Several of the people who went on to do Monty Python, or that was the week that was the kind of forerunner to. I'm not sure how it works, but they were involved in Brazil. And then when they dropped Robert De Niro into the middle of it as this plumber, this renegade plumber.
I think that's what I'm recommending, when he switched the pipes leading from the excrement to those people's. That's kind of my philosophy.
And the government plumbers, their suits filled up with human stuff. Yeah. Oh, God.
That's my aspiration.
It's a great movie. Brazil is a great movie. It always leaves me feeling real uncomfortable, though, because I'm not really sure how I'm supposed to feel about it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for checking in, William. Take care.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
All right, take care. Now, see, y'all couldn't tell he was from Louisville. And you say Louisville. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California. Hey, Sanchez.
That was actually a funny call.
It was. That guy's funny. I love him. Yeah.
I do want to let you know that I am wearing shoes and socks before I start here.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Something new and different, huh?
No, yeah, I know. Hey, Can
ever
I
since,
add
ever since you moved to California, you got to wear shoes and socks, right?
Well, yeah. Otherwise, they think very badly of you. And it's got to be the latest style, too. You know that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Can I just add one thing, since everybody's being brutally frank here, especially AJ, and add one quick take to this? Because if I can just open this up just a little bit, because, you know, I don't want to insult Southerners, but it... especially Kathy, I do not want to do that. But the point that I want to say is my personal frustration is how on every level we have to kowtow to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah,
that's in politics, that's in the media, that's in the news.
But is that a Southern thing?
No, that's what I'm saying. I just wanted to open it up because, as you know, ignorance is no accident, and it exists everywhere. I mean,
sure,
you know,
sure.
It's on different levels. If I can just tell you a quick story. Look, I'm a DJ, and I DJ in clubs and private parties. Uh-huh. Out here, if you can imagine 100 Britney Spears all walking around in a room, that's what I have to spin to. I'm serious, yeah. Man. So, they just walk around with better clothes and better shoes, the latest style. But
no, I've spent enough time in L.A. and New York to know exactly what you're talking about. You walk into a room of Britney Spears, and it's just like, I don't know how to describe it. I don't know how to describe it.
It gives me the willies, man. It gives me the heebie-jeebies. It just really does. And I really don't like spinning in that environment anymore because musically that's not my style. But,
right.
You know, but at any rate.
You got to go where the money is.
I know, at this point. Well, see, that's going to bring up where my topic is going here. Obviously, the money is in Saudi Arabia. A few weeks ago, when Dick Cheney was summoned to Saudi Arabia, and King Abdullah was dictating foreign policy to our vice president,
which by the way is nothing new.
I realize that. But most people don't realize, and this is going to be a strange dot for me to connect. It's going to be kind of complicated. So I'm pretty sure that you're going to get where I'm going with this. Our current policy in Iraq is stay the course in camouflage. And I think I've connected the dot here where when you have somebody like King Abdullah dictating not only that, hey, you know, if you pull out of Iraq, if you pull your American soldiers out of there, we are going to flood and support the Sunnis. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as you already know, Iran is supporting the Shiites.
Right.
And I somehow, when I heard about the Darwin theory that was brought up here a few weeks ago, I somehow connected the dot to the point where, okay, Bush will get up there, he'll completely ignore the Iraqi study group report, and it's been like, 6 weeks since we've had the elections, and the only change, visible change that you've seen has been Robert Gates as the new Secretary of Defense. But otherwise, honest to God, Mike, I haven't seen any changes. So I'm wondering, am I connecting the wrong dot here?
No, you're on the right track. You're on the right track. Just be careful because you're liable to go insane if you keep this up.
Well, I'll tell you one more thing. And honest, again, because of the Christmas holidays here, and look, I kind of share the same spiritual and religious beliefs as you, but I have to psych myself into the holiday spirit because, again, I'm a DJ, I'm spinning Christmas parties, but man, when I heard Bush talking this morning, especially when he told us to go out shopping, that killed it for me.
Oh my God, I wanted to pick up the nearest sharp utensil and just ram it into my thigh and go, no, I didn't hear that. You know, it just tends to make you want to get stoned and stay that way, just to try to get through. Not that any of us do that anymore because we're all much smarter than that, but that's the tendency. It's just I can't. Why should I live in an environment unstoned that is obviously just pure acid trip? There is no sense to any of this at all. This is so far. We talked about Kafka last night briefly.
That's correct, yep.
It's so far beyond that. It's so far beyond Orwell. I mean, what the hell are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine what you go through doing the DJ work. I couldn't do it unless, like I say, I just got high and stayed there.
Because I love music, man. That's the only reason why.
I hear you. Thanks, Sanchez.
Okay, man.
We'll talk again.
Take care.
Take care. I'm only talking theoretically, of course.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff in Phoenix, KPHX, Nova M, who engineered the program and answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall is our webmaster. Thanks to Militant Mods at MikeMolloy.com on the message board. Ben Birch, White Rose Society Archives Program, the executive producer is Catherine Bay. Tomorrow night is our Christmas program. We're going to try to bring Molly in and read to her the night before Christmas if she doesn't try to grab microphones and headsets and dials, and which is what she'll probably do. Also, our reading from Luke, I think we may have something on for our Druidic or Celtic or Wiccan friends, we may, on that holiday, which is how this all started, frankly. What else we got? Reading from Luke, night before Christmas. Do we have the telltale heart? No, that's Halloween.
What?
Never mind, Kathy. And all the bumper music tomorrow will be Christmas music. And what else? What else do we normally do for Christmas? Do we talk about the nasty topics, or what do?
Is it Christmas?
Okay. The producer of the Mike Malloy program has been so far under the weather, she has to look up to see bottom. But she'll be okay soon, I hope. Bob is calling from Arizona. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing tonight, man?
Better than I should be.
I hear that. Listen, AJ, in response to AJ, I'm from northern Louisiana originally. Uh-huh. And we don't have any more pride in Mr. Chuckles than any Yankee from Maine that I know of. You know, I mean, he just happens to be
right.
Have a lot of money from Texas, and also it doesn't speak well for Yale University. I mean, you know, the guy spends a lot of time there and still comes out sound like a dumbass, but you know what?
I know, but now, Bob, we're not going to let this degenerate into a telephone war between the states. Come on.
Well, I'm just...
You know what he was saying, and you and I can sit here and agree that somebody has a real thick New Jersey accent. We just know damn good and well they're in the mafia, right?
Well, or he is quite possibly a redneck.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Well, yeah, and
We all talk funny... to people who are listening,
that's true.
When I call Toledo, Ohio, to talk to what remaining the few remaining friends I have there, they all sound like I don't know. It's hard for me to understand them. They all talk through their nose, and that's where I'm from. You see, and when I hear that talk through your nose thing. I just automatically get some kind of an image in my head about who's doing the talking, and then I think, wait a second, that's where I'm from.
Yeah, and I'll tell you a funny story. When I was in the military, and they sent me to a northern facility to
learn how to kill.
Yeah, to learn how to kill and walk in a line. And I had this drill sergeant who was from Vermont, I believe. And he would sit there and yell at me, and I'd shake my boots. I had to turn to a black guy who was from Chicago and say, what in the hell did that man just say? Now, I could understand the black fella, but I couldn't understand this dude from Vermont. I'll let you go. I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday and blessed be.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Man. We just opened up, AJ opened up a rat's nest here tonight, didn't he?
I'm probably just sick enough with this cold to tell this story and make it slightly humorous. But I remember when I first started screening calls for you, when you first had a national audience, so to speak,
yeah.
On IE America, and a guy called up one night and we were on in Clinton, Arkansas. It was one of our larger stations.
Right, it was.
One of the larger markets we had was Clinton, Arkansas. And the guy, I guess he'd been listening to you for about a week, and he called up. He said, well, I don't understand it. This guy on the radio. Yes, sir. What, take your name. Would you like to get on the air with Mike Moy? Well, he sounds like he don't like the president. he don't like the president? And this guy called me every day for a week, and he'd never heard a non-conservative talk show before.
Right.
You know, I'm starting to get the feeling this guy, Mike's screaming Bush crime family, neo-Nazis. Well, I'm starting to get the feeling he don't like the president.
Well,
it's really funny. It's funnier when I'm not on cough syrup.
I know. The truth is, there is a different attitude. There always has been in the South, and it comes from the pace. Although enough far Westerners and Northeasterners and Midwesterners have moved to the South, especially a place like Atlanta, I have watched this city go from a mid-sized southern city into a megalopolis that has totally completely lost its southern identity. A lot of the boosters for Atlanta said, well, at least we're not Birmingham. Well, that's true. And, Birmingham was all eat up in the civil rights movement with riots and murder and church bombings and hate and lynchings, where Atlanta had some white progressives here way back in the 50s who said, no, we're not going to let that happen. And that's all changed now. Atlanta, I don't know what Atlanta is. I have no idea what Atlanta has become, but it is something I'm not familiar with. But suffice it to say that regional stuff is with us. It'll always be with us. We'll talk about it more some night, because I get so sick of talking about George W. Bush and the murder and mayhem that has become the fabric of our the tapestry of our lives. You know what I'm saying? To Diane and Barbara and Rick and Ray, I'm sorry I didn't get to you. We'll do it tomorrow night. All right? Party time tomorrow night. Be here. All right? We're going to celebrate the baby Jesus. Well, no, actually, we're going to celebrate the winter solstice, but we'll be celebrating the baby Jesus, too. So we'll see you tomorrow night. All right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.